Chapter 40. Arion. Arion slowed when he noticed moonlight glinting off the edge of a dagger pressed against Amaresia's throat.
Toss the weapons!
The voice came from the shadows of one of the nearby brick buildings. Arion turned to look at the man holding Amaresia. He could see there was no way to reach her before the angry-looking thug slit her throat. So, instead, he concentrated on his breathing, burying his emotions deep inside the way his father had taught him when he was a boy. Arion lowered his twin blades to the ground and waited. Out of the darkness, three more ruffians took shape. This was no street tribe of orphaned children they were dealing with. These were clan members. The men shuffled their feet as they pulled him into the darker recesses of the narrow lane. One grabbed Arion's swords, as the others attempted to thoroughly pat him down for any other weapons he might have hidden on his body. Amaresia didn't move. Her eyes remained strong. "Don't worry," Arion said, hoping to impart what hope he could under the circumstances. "Everything will be all right. I promise." He couldn't understand why his gift hadn't alerted him. He should have sensed something was going to happen before they had been within 5 paces of that alley. Looking around, it didn't take long for his eyes to adjust. There were more of them than he had first anticipated, possibly over 6, depending on how many others there might have been hiding further down the alleyway. No one said anything. He watched as they slid a gag over Amaresia's mouth and tied it off, no doubt trying to keep her from alerting the city patrol. Not that it would have mattered. The patrol never ventured this far south into Cheapside. "What do you want?" Arion asked, his temper beginning to rise.
"Well, looky what we have here. If it ain't the all-high and mighty Dark Warrior himself, come to pay us humble folks a little visit."
There was something in the voice that Arion recognized. It belonged to a tall, shabby individual near the front of the ominous-looking group. The man's dark hair fell halfway across the side of his face. Grabbing Arion by the wrists, they twisted his arms behind his back and started to tie them off with a thick strip of leather binding.
"What do you fools think you're doing? Do you know who this is? Use the manacles."
Tearing his slender frame away from his companions, the thin-faced young man stepped forward and with a scrutinizing glare walked a complete circle around Arion. There was a familiarity that Arion thought he recognized in the man's eyes, but couldn't quite place. The cold iron clamped shut around Arion's wrist. He took a deep breath. This was going to be a bit of a problem.
"Bring him,"
the spokesman called out, before doing an about-face and marching off in the opposite direction. Without warning, Arion was being shoved deeper into the darkness. Twisting around, he caught a quick glimpse of Amaresia being steered in the same direction. Their horses were being led away. He was thankful he hadn't taken the time to saddle Shade. Given nothing more than the freedom to move his head, he tried his best to memorize their path in case they were afforded an opportunity to escape. However, the farther into the maze of side streets they went, the more hopeless their situation became. He knew where they were being taken. The Warrens. The Warrens was a city within a city. A labyrinth of back thoroughfares, dark alleyways, abandoned warehouses, dilapidated buildings, and degraded people. Even the city patrol, comprised mostly of former Alondrian lancers, had enough sense to steer clear of the Warrens. Arion had only ever set foot in the place a few times in his life, and none of those occasions had left him with pleasant memories. He trembled at the thought, not so much for himself, but for what Americia was about to be subjected to.
Every city had its poor, whether by choice or circumstance. The larger the city, the larger the collection of those underprivileged, and where there were men and women of low standing, there were always those willing to prey or profit on their situation. In a city the size of Eremore, that population was considerable. One thing he knew for certain, the farther they walked, the less likely their chances of making it out were going to be. If the royal palace was the heart of Eremore, then the Warrens was its lower gut, the place housing all the dross of society, as the elite would have called them. There was a certain sort of freedom in living on the streets, Arian guessed, not having to worry about responsibilities, doing whatever you wanted, when you wanted. Having lived in both worlds, however, Arian had to admit he would rather take on the added duties accompanying a hard day's honest labor if it meant not wondering where his next bed and meal would be coming from. Unlike the rest of those he associated with in the palace, Arian had a different view of the streets and those unfortunate enough to be living there. Many, like him, had been given no option, as their livelihoods had been stripped away by death or loss of work. However, there were plenty whose lives as vagabonds had been by choice, those who had no desire to profit from an honest day's work, those who sought their possessions through more unsavory means. On the streets, there was a different set of rules. Life was harder and far more dangerous. Property belonged only to those strong enough to hold on to it. It was a harsh life, but one in which Arian was very familiar. The small escort came to an abrupt halt outside a metal door, barring entrance to what appeared to be a simple stone outhouse, at least from the exterior. Arian knew all too well where this led. He curled his hands and quietly worked his wrists back and forth in hopes of pulling free of the metal cuffs. He hoped to dig deep enough to draw blood and use it as a lubricant, but the manacles were still too tight. He knew that once inside, there would be no turning back. The lanky man in front waited for one of his men to throw back the latch and open the door. After grabbing a torch off one of the inner walls, the man with the straight dark hair turned and winked in Arian's direction before marching inside. Arian wondered what that was all about. He watched as the man's head melted into the shadows and disappeared from view. One by one, the others entered and disappeared as well, until it was finally his turn. Instead of finding a rancid set of privies, there was a circular stone stairwell leading down. With a firm push, Arian was shoved forward. He glanced back over his shoulder to make sure Americia was still there. He could see her being guided through the entrance above. The knife was no longer at her throat, but the man holding it kept her close as she stepped onto the open landing and started to make her way down. The light from the torches reflected off the moisture seeping from the walls around them. The air was strong with the scent of burnt tar, but free from the sharp odor of unwashed bodies and emptied chamber pots which clung to the streets above. For that, at least, Arian was thankful. Downward they climbed, one foot in front of the next. Their muffled steps echoed off the stone encasement. Apart from an occasional grunt or groan, it was the only sound to be heard. The stairwell finally opened into a small antechamber housing a large iron door. Unlike other entranceways, this one was uniquely shaped. It was circular, like a great iron disc. The front of the door was decorated with a raised arrangement of intersecting lines, similar to a cartographer's charting of a city's streets. Arian knew it to be a complete mapping of the underground tunnels within the Warrens. Two sentinels flanked either side of the entrance, guarding what lay beyond. They spared a quick glance at Arian, taking measure of the newcomer's potential risk. With each man standing at least a head or two above him, the assessment didn't last long. Arian was disappointed by their nonchalant view of his stature. However, it was understandable, as their attention was quickly diverted toward the open stairway, where Amaricia was just stepping into the room's light. She had a gift for drawing attention. The angular man at the front took a step toward the door, and both guards drew their swords. Sweat-stained muscles glistened in the dancing light. Arian gawked at the size of their falchions, each twice the width of a normal blade. They looked more like troll cleavers than weapons. That was, if there were such thing as trolls. One of the sentries raised his blade and pointed at the skinny, dark-haired man. "Password!" The head of their small troop crossed his arms and tapped his foot repeatedly on the floor. Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap.
"You're kidding."
Neither guard budged.
"We just came through here, dimwits."
Still, no movement. The lanky man turned to look at Arian.
"You would think, as long as I've lived here, these two nincompoops would have the good manners to recognize my face and let me through."
He took a moment to glare at each guard in turn.
"Oh, very well," he groused, before straightening his shoulders and clearing his throat. "When hope is all but lost, and light has turned to dark, there will a sign be given, the rising of the marked."
Arian recognized the passage from a book his parents had read to him as a child. He had lost it years ago, back when he had run the streets of Erremor. How odd that it would be used here, in the middle of one of the deadliest places in Aldor. The spokesman combed an impatient hand through his straight hair and huffed, clearly embarrassed at having to recite a silly children's rhyme. The two guards slid their weapons back into the sheaths at their waists, then grabbed a large cleaver connected to the outer edge of the door and flipped it back. There was a loud metallic clicking sound as the locking mechanism was released. Arian felt a twinge of dread as the rusted-out piece of hinged metal started to open. The Warren Underground was not known for mercy. They had their own set of laws, carried out by tribunal, where the heads of the clans would meet to exact their own form of justice. Arian couldn't imagine what the clans would possibly want with him. Sure, he was the High King's protector, but what did that have to do with the Warrens? Over his shoulder, he could see that Amaricia was watching him. He was proud of the way she held herself, not showing any fear. It was quite the accomplishment, considering their present circumstances. Arian cast a quick glance to the left of her, at the man holding his swords. He wanted to keep him in sight at all times, in case the opportunity arose for him to make a play for his weapons. Arian knew the barbarism practiced in this place, and there was no way he was going to let them do to him or Amaricia what he'd seen done to others in the past. He'd kill Amaricia before he let the men down here get their hands on her, and she would thank him for it. The giant guards each placed a shoulder against the door and shoved. Light poured from the opening and bathed the small antechamber in a warm glow. As best he could, Arian craned his neck to see around the men and get a peek of what lay beyond. Their tall, slender guide took a few steps into the next room, and then bowed toward a raised platform with five seats. The platform had three tiers.
Two high-backed chairs rested on opposite sides of the first rise, two more chairs sat atop the second rise, and a solitary, throne-like seat, much larger and grandiose than the others, sat at the top. The Warren Tribunal was similar to the political structure of Aldor and its five kingdoms. Each clan had a single head or representative that held one of the ruling seats on the tribunal. And just as Aldor had a high king, there was a clan chieftain whose rule stood above the rest. The only way to negate a chieftain's order was by a unanimous vote from the remaining heads. The downside to being chief, however, was that, unlike the civility of a king's ordination, the clan's chieftain was chosen by the right of Oktar. Any one of the clan heads could challenge their chieftain to combat for the throne. Some found the exercise barbaric, but when you are vying for the right to lead the less civilized members of society, all polite considerations are thrown out. The five seats were unoccupied at present, which meant Arion wasn't being brought before the council. However, the assembly chamber, which was more like a throne room than a tribunal hall, was beginning to fill. It had been a number of years since he had stepped foot in this place, but he didn't think it had changed all that much. Maybe a bit more decorated than the last time he was there. But then again, the last time he was there, the room's decor had been stained with blood and viscera. Stepping through the doorway, there was an arched set of pillars lining the outer perimeter, holding back the untold amount of earth above them. Arion had always wondered by whose hand these underground lairs had been constructed. By the wear of the stone, they looked to have been created centuries ago, when magic was readily used as the foundational building blocks of such edifices. Colorful tapestries rimmed the outer walls, bringing a sharp contrast to the mellow gray of the stone room. The heavy woven material bore the markings of formal crests. Each one was set apart by different colors, emblems, and symbols. Gathered around each of those banners were men and women, adorned in garments fashioned of similar color and design. Although not apparently hostile, each group kept a wary eye on the others as they waited for whatever proceedings they had been summoned for to commence. The tension of those gathered could be seen in the shuffling of their feet, in the stiffness of their movements, in the way their eyes darted from one person to the next, watching the placement of each other's hands. You couldn't have found a more cutthroat-looking assembly in all of Aldor than what was now gathered in this underground room. Each of the members was heavily armed. Arion could have used a few of these gruff underbellies during his recent battle with the creatures outside of Eremor, had he not been more worried of getting a knife to the back than a claw to the front. On the streets, whether in the Warrens or not, Arion knew the ultimate code was survival of the fittest, and life balanced on three things: the size of your arms, the smart in your head, and your supply of luck. Of the three, the last proved, more often than not, to be the most valuable. From inside the doorway, Arion continued to struggle with the metal cuffs. The edges cut into his wrists, but still didn't budge. He was going to have to figure out a way to defend himself with his hands, quite literally, tied behind his back. Amaresia was moved forward and placed to his left. Angling away from the guard, Arion pressed his shoulder against hers, hoping to relay a little reassurance in her direction. Now if he just had someone to do the same for him. He noticed they had removed the gag from her mouth. "Are you all right?" he asked.
"I'm fine."
She glanced around the room.
"What do you think they want?"
"I wish I knew. We're not dead. I guess that's something." He felt ashamed for not having been able to better protect her. Here he was, the guardian protector to the High King, and he was waylaid by a ragged group of common street thugs. How could he have let this happen? Once more he was brought back to the question of why his magic hadn't worked. He could only think of one other time in his life it had done that before, back when he was just a child, playing on the streets with... Arian's eyes widened. His head shot up as he looked around for the lanky captor. Surely that isn't... Their guide's back was to him as he talked to a group of angry-looking clansmen near the front, but then he shifted his stance to point in their direction. When he did, Arian was afforded enough time to really study the man's face.
Poe?
He couldn't believe it. His heart raced. It was him. At least he thought it was. That small, chubby boy that used to follow him around everywhere he went, emulating everything he did, was now this tall, lean man who appeared to hold some kind of weight within the Warren clans. How did that happen? There had always been something about Poe, a hidden gift, one that even Poe might not have known existed. Whenever his former childhood friend came within a certain distance, Arian's magic disappeared. It was as if Poe had the ability to negate the magic of others. Arian had always found it unsettling, but figured it was what made Poe such a good negotiator. There was always a level playing field whenever he was around.
"Bring them," the grown-up version of Poe said, as he motioned for the men guarding Arian and Amaricia to follow.
They left through one of the tunnels at the back, which had been blocked by the free-swinging draperies holding another of the colourfully designed crests. Each of the other banners held similar tunnels behind them, each clan with their own entrance and exit. Pulling the heavy material aside, Poe waited for the others to pass.
"She wants to see them,"
was all he said, before turning around and marching down the dark corridor. Arian decided to put his theory to the test.
"Poe?"
The young man's shoulders flinched.
"So you finally figured it out, huh?
Well, give me some credit. The last time I saw you, you were waist high and three times as wide.
Amazing what a little time and life on the streets can accomplish."
There was a clear undertone of disdain stemming from his words.
"Hey, it wasn't my choice for the king to give me—"
"No,"
Poe spat, turning completely around to look Arian in the eyes.
"It was your choice to leave."
Arian was unsure how to respond. Poe didn't give him the chance as he turned around and moved into another tunnel.
"I haven't changed, Poe."
"Ha!"
Poe lifted the tips of his fingers to his mouth. "I see you still bite your nails when you get upset." Poe quickly dropped his hand. They came to a stop outside a wooden door. There was a shield with a brightly colored red crest on the front, just above the latch.
"Don't pretend like you know me, Arian, guardian protector of the High King."
Poe's last words felt like daggers being jabbed into him. Poe took a deep breath and knocked on the shield.
"Enter,"
said a muffled voice from the other side.
Poe pulled back on the latch and slid the door open.
He handed his torch to one of the guards waiting in the hallway. Arian and Amaricia followed him in. The room was larger than Arian had expected, with an almost royal feel to it. Expensive furnishings were strewn haphazardly around the space. Large swaths of satin, silk, and velvet were hung and draped across every inch of the room, so that the colors of red and gold inundated its occupants. Walking across the fur rugs lining the cold floor, they made their way to a standing hearth, where a fire was busy snapping and popping, as the smoke meandered its way up the flue. How the engineers had managed to forge out a chimney so far underground was truly amazing. Oddly enough, even this far beneath the surface of Erremor, the room carried a strong scent of burnt pine and cinnamon. It was a rather provocative mixture, one Arian would not have expected to find amid such a tumultuous sea of cutthroats. And yet the smell was oddly familiar. Arian scanned the room for the source of the voice. Nothing about the place gave the impression of a meeting hall. It felt more like someone's personal chambers. Mounds of soft pillows lined sections of the outer wall. A hefty four-post bed sat near the back, covered in fur. There were no lit candles, no lamps, no torches of any kind, just simple firelight. It gave the impression of a campfire, where friends would gather and talk of times long past. Only now, Arian wasn't sure if talking was what his former friend had in mind. "What's going on, Poe?" Arian asked. "Why have you brought us here? Who is it you want me to see?"
"Well, he hasn't changed much, has he, Poe?"
a voice said from somewhere in the back, behind one of the hanging tapestries.
"Always looking for answers."
Arian recognized the voice immediately. It was somehow deeper, fuller, more seductive, but still the same.
"Kira?"